Okay.
Yeah.
We're recording.
We're here.
I am actually, I was running back and forth, double and triple check.
Quadruple check.
That the thing is actually saving a file on the hard disk and that it's getting bigger and the little thing is scrolling and we see the little meters wiggling and all that.
Yeah.
Because it was very, very frustrating last week to.
That was kind of awful.
To do a whole big conversation and feel really good about it at the end.
That was great.
That was great. Okay, so you're going to go upstairs and now I'm going to get it uploaded and processed and all that. And
not.
There's
yet.
Nothing there.
Nothing there.
Nothing there. Just a whistling expanse of emptiness. So anyway, we're going to try again, and this is going to work better.
Or something.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I think we're doing something a little bit different, like we're doing some...
Yeah, we're going to try and introduce... You know, we've been sort of doing the show and hoping, you know, well, a structure will emerge eventually.
Or something. So we're following an emergent structure.
We're trying out a structure.
Yeah.
So we're going to do... last week, we talked about what was in our reading piles.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to continue and talk about what we're reading.
Yeah.
So do you want to give an update on anything you've been reading?
I haven't started anything new, but yeah. I think Antifa is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
What can you tell us about, like, how what he actually talks about?
He's not kidding when he says it's a handbook. He wants to give you enough background and history on the movement and kind of lay out a way for you to plug in.
So a handbook as to, like, here's a guide of how to actually participate?
You got to participate, yeah.
That's, okay, that sounds
but,
very
but it's grounded in the history of, like, what the movement has been and what it's, you know. Here's how you can fit.
I saw on Amazon it said people who ordered Antifa, the anti-fascist handbook, yeah, also ordered, and there was, like, a...
Oh, go ahead.
A black hooded sweatshirt, some black sneakers, and a black face mask. So
yeah, no, I'm not really the face mask type.
No. Okay. But I'd like to point out the reason that people do sometimes wear, is that an anorak? Not an anorak.
They wear like a hoodie and a Guy Fawkes mask or something like that.
Yeah, it's because it's potentially very dangerous for your identity to be known if you're going to be standing up to fascists in public.
Yeah.
Potentially dangerous to your employment or your family or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real thing. Has he talked about that at all yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay, so.
So, interesting, as always.
Okay, yeah. Any other books you want to update on?
Oh, gosh, so... The kids are all really excited about picking their birthday treats. They're just... Veronica can't decide.
Oh, you should... Do you remember the author or the full title?
Gosh. Yeah. I don't remember the full title, but you know what? We can post it, but I've got it. It's... I don't recall the author's name, but it's just paleo desserts.
This is like paleo treats or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a book of... it's a recipes, a cookbook of these... I think we mentioned it, of paleo... desserts, and there's sections on ice cream and cheesecake.
You're right. It's a contradiction in terms.
A little bit.
But the idea is a lot of people have comfort foods and ritual foods that are sweet.
Yeah.
And here's how to not go too far off the path and just start binging on
cake. So, I mean, even they're not like, okay, no, really? That would Paleolithic, you know, hunter-gatherers have had access to...
No, they would not.
All these foods, but it is an attempt to make some of these dishes out of, say, healthier flours, you know,
Healthier fats.
Healthier fats and sugars that are less damaging to your glycemic index.
So Pippin straight away chose lemon bars.
Oh, he loves sour things, His absolute favorite was your...
lemon pound cake.
Was your lemon pound cake, which
that
you made with
lemon
zest and lemon frosting. And you made it really tart.
Really tart.
I mean, it was like, it was the way I used to enjoy lemon meringue pie as a kid, when it actually, when like the pie part was actually really would make your mouth pucker, and then the meringue was all sweet to contrast with it. Oh yeah, sorry, I'm
starting to salivate. Yeah, that's Bibi chose that, and Joshua chose cheesecake as always, raspberry cheesecake. He's got a cheesecake thing.
Yeah,
and then Sam always traditional, wanted classic brownies.
Classic brownies.
Yep.
He likes chocolate.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And Veronica, can't decide. Brain aneurysm. Ah!
Okay. And we'll put that book in the show notes.
Yeah.
On the, so I don't want to, so I asked you to I'm going to talk about a couple of books, but sure. I want you not to let me ramble on, because this is something I do all the time in my blogging, is I write notes up about what I'm reading and I review books. And I
like
can,
your little quip that you could write a 10-page essay on a 3-page
absolutely, story. Yeah, a really interesting 3-page short story. I could write a 10-page essay without breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
And I've kind of done that. Like there was a really, there was a short story in the New Yorker that I read you guys.
Oh, that was a good, I remember that one.
Yeah. I don't suppose you remember the title, do you?
Of course not. It was that ghost story?
It's a ghost story.
Yeah,
it's a contemporary ghost story that fit totally into the modern environment with cell phones and Wi-Fi and all this. But at the same time was like,
super creepy.
And it also was like, set in like an ancient, not really ancient, but like an old estate, an old castle. And so the combination of like the Gothic elements and the modern elements was super effective. Yeah. Really brilliant story. I'm going to cheat a little, but I'm going to mention a movie.
Yeah, it's okay.
So we haven't been, Grace and I don't get to see movies very often.
No.
We just don't. And it's very hard to find a movie that's kid friendly. And so sometimes we wind up stretching the definition of kid friendly a little bit, as in, oh, this one's only rated PG-13.
or like, oh, it's a comic book. How bad can it be?
Yeah. Anyway. So sometimes we pick a more modern movie that's not really a kid's movie, but we'll preview it and show it to the kids and they'll enjoy it. So I had been curious about this film, Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah.
Which came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
Benedict Cumberbund or whatever his name is.
Snicklebatch.
Who played Smaug in The Hobbit. No. His most famous role.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
But I was curious because Doctor Strange was this weird figure from way back when I used to read comics.
Yeah, I remember Doctor Strange only
vaguely
after being reminded of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did read some of those. I read Fantastic Four and I never got into X-Men. Basically, I read the comics that my stepbrother was done with.
Whatever he was finished reading.
So whatever he was finished reading, he would dump off for me and I would read. And the ones that a lot of them were Spider-Man and whatnot. And I wasn't that into Spider-Man, but unless there was some like science fiction aspect to them.
Yeah.
Like even as a child, I really gravitated to that. So if like Spider-Man was fighting some sci-fi villain, then I was all into it.
Oh yeah.
I remember being really intrigued by Dr. Octopus and some of these cyborg villains and whatnot, and Galactus and Fantastic Four, their story themselves, which was like more science fiction oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And Doctor Strange was an unusual Marvel figure in that he actually was doing magic.
Yeah.
And magic was also supposed to fit into this universe.
Well, magic is sort of like metaphysics.
Metaphysics, sorcery.
Sorcery kind of thing.
So we watched Doctor Strange. We showed it to the kids.
Scandal.
What?
Scandal.
Yeah, well then, there was actually only one scene that I thought was too violent for them.
Yeah.
And actually was the opening scene. And so when we played it back, when we watched it again, so you could see it, I just skipped that scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's this about this arrogant neurosurgeon who is in a horrible car accident. don't read x-rays on your phone while you're driving.
Just as a tip.
It's like, don't do that. It would have made a really good, you could adapt that scene only slightly and it would make a really good anti-texting PSA, yeah. Right? Because he has this horrific accident and his hands are all smashed up, right?
It really destroys his life's work.
So they put his hands back together so that physically they look more or less normal, but they tremble and shake and are very weak.
Right.
And he's just devastated.
Yeah.
And so he's... And
desperate.
And desperate because he eventually travels to...
Kathmandu or Nepal or something.
Is it Nepal?
I think he travels to Nepal.
I've got some notes here. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, this is like all spoilers, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, yeah.
Nepal. Yep. I mean, the movie came out a year ago, so...
But yeah, if you haven't seen it, you know, sorry.
Skip ahead. So he was looking for a way to find... He found a lead in that his physical therapist had had a patient before who actually restored his spinal function.
Right.
Who was wheelchair bound and then was able to walk and play basketball again.
Go on about his life.
And he said, no, he went to this place in Nepal. And so strange...
spent his last dollar, goes to Nepal.
Yeah, yeah. So,
finds the place, etc.
So he's a super materialist, you know, scientific rationalist.
Yeah.
And he meets this ancient one, played by Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Who's this pale, kind of skinny white woman of sort of indeterminate age.
Yes.
And he's grousing about, oh, you know, isn't that cute, the chakras and all that. And she punches him so hard that he leaves his body.
He's an out-of-body experience.
And he can, like, float. He's floating above his body. So she literally knocks his astral body right out of his body with one punch. And it's a hilarious moment. And he's looking down on his body and then comes zapping back into his body. He's like, what? What did you do? Did you dose me with acid in the tea? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then she like basically puts her finger on her forehead and says, open your third eye. And he has this blast off into just hallucinatory, mystical
experience.
Flying through space and time and the multiverse and all that. The graphics are really fun.
Yes.
They're slightly cheesy.
Great one-liners.
There are a lot of great one-liners. Snappy dialogue. Tilda Swinton is really good in it.
Yes.
But it is a little weird, the sort of casting choice for her, given the original story, is a little odd that there aren't more Asian characters in the lead role. And that was kind of controversial.
Yeah.
And the filmmaker said, oh, well, they really didn't want to be accused of, because in the original characters in Nepal are quite racist. They're Fu Manchu caricatures, whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, we can't do that. And they didn't even want to come close to that.
Right.
So they whitewashed it instead, which is like, well.
We're so much better. But I think there's this thing. I don't think you can tell King Kong.
Yeah.
Without you can't do like a
without racism.
Yeah, you can't do a sensitive retelling of King Kong that's not racist, right?
No, not really.
You know, it's a racist not really. Story, so there it is.
But I mean, on the one hand, I'm glad they picked Tilda Swinton because she's really good in the movie.
Yeah, she's good in the movie.
And she's kind of her character is kind of fascinating to watch. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, yeah, it's like this was a case of whitewashing. And so an Asian actor didn't get that role.
Good job.
And so I got kind of mixed feelings about that. Anyway, the symbolism gets pretty heavy-handed. There's a scene where Strange breaks into the library of forbidden books, and he pulls down the most forbidden books, and then he's holding an apple. He takes a bite of the apple and puts it center screen, right in the center of the screen on this desk.
In case you can't figure out what's happening.
And then he opens the book, right? You know, that's the forbidden fruit, you know. I paused the movie at this point and explained this symbol to the kids in case they weren't getting it. And they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah. And then shortly after that, I paused the movie and said, okay, I don't mean to spoil it for you.
But can you figure out what's happening?
Can you figure out what's happening? Can you figure out the plot now?
What's going to happen next?
And
you can.
You it's, can.
It's and a little too...
That's the downfall of the movie. A lot of the acting is really good. A lot of the scenes are funny. They're snappy one-liners. The action is kind of amazing.
Yes, it's very engaging action.
Yeah, but halfway through the movie, you can if you're into screenwriting at all,
you can figure out what's going to happen next.
You can like, oh, okay, the arc's going to go this way. This character, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. And then you say, okay, and then you go. And what that does, and it turns out I was entirely right,
what that does is it makes the movie
less really interesting.
Less interesting. It kind of drags.
It drags after
like
that.
Once you like, it all clicks.
And you just
it's
see.
It's really kind of slow.
And you spend the rest of the movie kind of seeing, playing out what you knew was going to happen. And it's, and a really good movie doesn't do that.
It should keep surprising you.
Yeah.
Even if it's all fits together well, it should keep surprising you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's definitely worth watching.
Oh, it's fun.
It's a fun movie. It's worth watching. There's some great effects and funny scenes, startling, you know, visuals. But it's shy of great.
Yeah.
It could have been great, but it would have had to be more surprising in the way the screenwriting worked out. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, and if you're watching on your, do people still watch DVDs? Is that what the people use now?
We have a Blu-ray.
Okay, so I don't even know what we're watching, sorry. Blu-ray
is just
like,
it's like
Easter eggs are fun.
Easter eggs.
The little clips at the end that are in the credits that you might skip.
Oh, yeah, if you get to the end, let the credits run.
There's some fun
because there are actually two scenes that are hidden in the credits, and that if you were in the theater, there's a very good chance if someone didn't tell you, oh yeah, stay for the extra scenes, you would have walked out. I would have walked out. And actually the first time I watched the movie on Blu-ray, I like, okay, it's the credits started, I'm like, okay, time for bed, and I put it away.
Right.
And I was reading about the movie on Wikipedia, and it said there are two extra scenes embedded in the watch the extra scenes.
See, now I always make the children stay in the theater until the credits stop running.
I get that I like the idea that you would stay and take a moment to read the names and appreciate all the people that worked on the movie.
Yes.
Because that's a lot of work. A lot of work goes into these movies. But sometimes some credit sequences, like at the end of Return of the King, you could be there for 10 minutes.
Yeah, you can. So, not usually, though.
Yeah.
Usually it's a few minutes, and it's worth my time.
But this was a big effects movie, so there were hundreds and hundreds of names.
Lots of credits, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
What else are you reading?
I want to mention, I'll skip over. There's a collection of stories by Alastair Reynolds. He's an author I really like. This collection is called Deep Navigation, and it was put out by the New England Science Fiction Association. Because he was a keynote speaker at a con. They do an annual convention.
Yeah.
And they publish a book usually with material from the keynote speaker. Or other collections.
It sounds like a fun con.
I would love to go to NESF, to go to BossCon.
BossCon?
Yeah, is it BossCon they do? Yeah, I haven't been to a con in so long. This one in particular is targeted more towards writing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so I'm more interested in going to a con to see authors speak or whatnot than I am to see to see it. Anyway, but so I'm like, oh, these are some more of his stories that I haven't read, and I've read the first few stories in the collection. And I'm like, oh, he went through his slush pile.
His own slush pile.
Of like his early stories and the stuff he didn't get published in Asimov's or in, you know, and put them in this book, and they're just not as good.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, so they're stories that don't quite work. I mean, I'll probably read a few more, but it's disappointing. You can see why it didn't have a major publisher. This collection didn't have a major publisher release it. Whereas his other collections of stories, I just want to say, if you're all into like dark space opera, his other collections of stories, including Galactic North is a collection, and then there's one called
it's losing. What's his name again?
Alistair Reynolds.
Okay.
Diamond Dogs Turquoise Days, the collection, mm-hmm. has some fantastic, unnerving, unsettling science fiction novellas in it. Yeah. Okay, one
what
more.
Else? One more, yeah. What else?
The Complete Enchanter, complete spelled C-O-M-P-L-E-A-T. So this was three novellas, which were collaborations between a writer named L. Sprague de Camp and a guy named Fletcher Pratt.
Yeah.
And the first two stories date back to 1940.
Oh.
So these are a little dated.
A little dated, but that's okay.
But what I'm realizing is, oh, this was part of the genesis of like the urban fantasy genre.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So these were examples of fantasy stories where they were blended in with the modern world.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, a character, Harold Shea, invents a way to transport himself into an alternate reality, which it turns out is a fantasy world.
Right.
And he does it through something he calls the syllogismobile, which is not a physical vehicle. It's like he creates an alternate set of mathematical axioms to describe reality.
Right.
And then he studies them really, really hard. And mm-hmm. his mind then can sort of jump tracks. And then he's gone, you know, to this.
Like through his brain? Like through his mind?
Well, no. I mean, his physical body has gone. Has moved. Has gone to another reality.
Because of these.
But it's you know, I should say, the stories do not take this setup terribly seriously or work super hard to explain it.
Got it. Okay.
It's just the setup, okay?
It's the setup.
So he can try. Well, the idea is that there are, these worlds of, say, the world of Scandinavian mythology,
right.
The world of Irish mythology, the world of Spencer's The Fairy Queen and whatnot, these are real places. They are real parallel universes. And the people that wrote these things were slightly deranged.
They could access
and
that.
They were crazy enough that they were perceiving as like inspiration an actual alternate universe.
Yeah.
So if you sort of reverse engineer these stories, and what would be the rules, the mathematical rules of reality that allowed this world to happen.
Uh-huh.
And if you can figure that out, then you can drive your syllogismobile into that place.
Right.
So it's pretty cool. So they go to the world of Norse myth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny. Everyone is foul-smelling and gross, and there are fleas and roaches everywhere, and it's freezing cold and wet. You know, it's not...
Yeah.
It's not glamorous, so this is like low fantasy.
Very low.
Yeah.
That's the thing I think I couldn't handle about, you know, medieval.
Going
life.
Back to
roaches. I just can't. God, roaches. No, I can't do it.
So, and you know, so they're quite funny. They are dated. The characters are pretty broad. They're pretty sexist in the way they portray women. If these things really bother you, I can't recommend it. But you can't delve back into any genre. Historic, you know, for in even like detective novels or whatever,
yeah,
you know,
there.
From the 40s and not be like, oh, there. This is so sexist, you know.
Yeah, it's we haven't come very far, so yeah,
not really. So you have to look for the aspects of the story that you enjoy
mm-hmm.
and that aren't, you know, and some of his characters are very good, some of the female characters are very strong and funny and you mm-hmm. know, worth reading.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I finished two of these novellas. I think he finished with Fletcher Pratt 5 or 6.
Yeah, what's the author's name again?
L. Sprague de Camp.
L. Sprague de Camp. Oh, there you go.
So it's been published. They've been published over the years in a whole variety of collections. The Complete Enchanter, The Incomplete Enchanter, which is more complete than The Complete Enchanter.
Yeah.
The less complete than The Incomplete, but still not fully complete. Complete anyway.
Wow.
I know you're giving me that look. It's like you could wind this up at any time.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any?
I think that's the stuff we're reading.
That's the stuff we're reading. Yeah. So I'm almost done with this. This is also, if you want to read more of my kind of rambling about books, my blog, thebooksthatwroteme.blogspot.com. I'll just give a quick plug for that because almost nobody reads it.
And somebody should. It's good.
But I still write it because I have to.
I have to.
Because
you don't have a choice in the matter.
I don't have a choice in the matter. Okay.
What's up next?
The next segment is something we'd like to call, and I'll eventually come up with some music or something, Walk a Week.
Walk a Week. Oh, yeah. That was pretty great.
So the idea is that we'll go for a walk every week, and then we'll talk about it.
Talk about our walk.
I don't know if this will really work out.
We'll see.
This was our first one.
This was our first walk. So, you can't call the annual dinner the first year.
Right.
So we can't really call it Walk a Week yet because it's just the first walk.
Hopefully a walk a week.
Hopefully a walk.
So our first walk was today. We took the kids. You should describe where.
Oh, to Rolling Hills County Park. It's Washtenaw County maintains some pretty great parks, and has I don't know, is that called a landscape architect or somebody sort of designs these parks.
Somebody worked at it.
Worked at it and came up with a really great layout.
The way I kind of noticed that it had been designed is the way the sight lines worked for the trails.
Right.
Where you're always looking at woods even though you're next to
all kinds of
things. Water park, a parking lot, a soccer field, a this or that.
Right. Yeah. All your sight lines are lined up so that you really see beauty almost all around
as you're walking around. Right. Yeah. And so you don't even realize you've made it all the way back around.
You walked 2 miles.
To your parking lot until suddenly you can see it.
Here it is.
And you have to get right on top of it before you see it.
Before it's there. Right.
Yeah.
No, it's really, really well done.
And
this is, was it actually kind of a first for me? If anyone knows, or anyone listening knows, I did a lot of hiking.
Yeah.
As a young adult, and
You did some serious hiking.
Some serious hiking. This, by contrast, was really a fairly low bar. It's actually paved.
Yeah, it's paved.
A paved path, which I think is a great development for accessibility.
It does actually hurt my feet more though.
Than soil does.
Yeah.
But it's. I think it's really excellent to have a park this.
Yeah.
Quality available to people in a wheelchair.
Yeah, and we were talking about having mixed feelings about cyclists on walking paths, but but as someone who does both, I'm kind of in favor of it.
Right. So. I'd personally rather see the places where cars get to use
scaled down
to the point where they're cars,
safer.
So they're safer for bikes.
Yeah, yeah.
But that whole conversation aside, it's a really well laid out park, and we did a couple of miles and really only did like a third of the park.
Yeah, we didn't look at the map until we were partway around.
Partway around, and really in detail until we were almost done. But we just started walking.
Yeah.
And it was windy and raining and all the kids are bitching and moaning.
We should be clear. All the kids demonstrate their unique personalities.
Yes.
So some of the kids, they're actually doing sprints. They're sprinting, like sprint forward, sprint back, and then they're turning it into games. They're playing and singing and practically dancing. And to me, that's to be walking along and having the kids out just with the only thing to do here is to take a walk.
Take a walk.
There's no electronics, you know, and to have them bouncing around and joking and
being themselves,
having fun. Is really inspiring. I'm really happy to see it. They're getting exercise and
enjoying each other's company.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's rare, unfortunately. It's rare.
And then there's the kid that doesn't want to go, and the kid that's tired, you gotta pick me up.
So that's the aspect of it that does make it pretty difficult to actually hike with six kids of different ages.
Yeah.
Eleanor has to be carried the whole way.
She's quite a trooper.
Yeah, because you can't. She did not walk on at all yet.
No,
Not even crawling yet. And Daniel
Peregrine
was complaining. I had to carry him for part of it, and then Benjamin Mary
is only four.
Who's only four? He walked a good portion of it.
So we did a third of the park.
Yeah,
and I want to say for maybe 2/3 of it, he walked and ran and ran and walked.
I carried him for a couple sections. He was getting tired.
Getting tired. And so, but
it's really carrying Pippin walking is like that's exhausting. He's heavy. Really heavy. Yeah.
But the big three, the varsity team.
Yeah.
They were right on.
They didn't complain at all.
Didn't complain. There for the whole time.
And we saw milkweed pods.
Oh yeah, we got to dissect a milkweed pod.
Yeah.
And we saw some great worms. Oh my goodness. Well, I have a thing for worms. I'm sorry.
You have a thing for worms. Yeah. We saw all kinds of great like worms. Horse chestnuts or things.
Yeah, horse chestnuts.
All kinds of
lots
stuff.
Lots of beautiful oaks.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
and then prairie grasses. Yeah,
it's they're nice. Restoring indigenous plants
indigenous
in these prairie areas. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice walk. And yeah, it was actually raining in our faces and blowing for the two-thirds of the walk.
But it was kind of nice, actually.
It's not... It was... warm enough out that it was not unpleasant. It actually felt kind of nice.
Kind of nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if, you know, you're getting your, if you're really moving.
If you're really moving, yeah, I wasn't cold. It
wasn't cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a good walk. I was glad. And I was glad to remember being at that park before with friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it turns out we have been to the water park before, but I barely remember
ages
it.
Ages and ages. It was like 10
Veronica was in a stroller.
Yes. Yes.
But I do have pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that was 10 years ago, 12 years ago. Things are going by.
Mowing by.
Anyway.
So that's the walk.
That's the walk a week.
Yeah.
And if all goes well, we'll have another walk to report next week. Although if we go to the same place, it's not going to be that exciting.
No, not that exciting. But yeah, we'll figure it out.
So we have a topic. We were sort of racking our brains a little. It's not that we don't have topics. It's that we have too many topics, and none of them seem that deep or that we haven't researched them enough yet to really be prepared.
To do a long thing.
But you want to talk about this Water Street scandal.
Yeah, Water Street's kind of turned into a thing here in Ypsilanti.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, and to be fair, before I get all the haters, we're all like, well, you're not even from Ypsilanti. Shut up.
Yeah, we are carpetbaggers.
A bunch of carpetbaggers out here.
Although I lived in Washtenaw County for 20 years before we moved to Saginaw.
Yeah.
And now I'm back in Washtenaw County.
And carpetbaggers always come from Connecticut, you know? that's how it works.
Are you talking about Ted Kennedy or are you talking about?
He's not from Connecticut.
Oh, it was from what became a senator there.
No, I'm talking about the phrase carpetbaggers. They were always referring to these salesmen with their bags made out of carpet.
Yeah.
They came traveling from Connecticut to other areas.
Okay.
They were shysters and they sold fake nutmegs.
Yeah, I'm going to have to mention Clinton, who became senator from New York, right?
She's not from New York. You know.
But that just became a thing. Like you looked for the state that you thought you could win.
You could win and then you move there.
Yeah.
But all that aside.
Yep.
We are not actually from Ypsilanti. We did not grow up in Ypsilanti.
No.
And right now.
We haven't. And we're not even in Ypsilanti City.
Technically, we have an Ypsilanti mailing address, but we live in the township.
Pittsfield Township.
Yeah. So
it's pretty. Pittsfield Township is this long strip of land that actually crosses through multiple mailing addresses.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Ann Arbor, Saline, and Ypsilanti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, it's the place we live.
Yes.
And this is an issue for the city proper of Ypsilanti.
Yes.
They have a large industrial site. Dozens of acres. Don't know the precise number of acres, but it's a large site.
Uh-huh.
Downtown. It was formerly, I think it was like a factory.
Yeah.
And it's a brownfield. It's filthy. It's right next to the river.
It's full of toxins.
Full of toxins. I mean, it looks nice. It's like all mowed grass right now.
It needs soil remediation.
So it needs some serious remediation as part of any new building that goes on.
Uh-huh.
And Ypsilanti has been trying for a long time now, I want to say 20 years, to get something into this site. And this way or that way, trying to get a project of development going here. Most recently, there's been a project called International Village to rehabilitate it into mostly housing.
Yeah.
Fairly high-end housing with some kind of rumored, talked-about affordable housing component.
Yeah, that always gets me. Like, oh yeah, well, we're gonna have 20% are gonna be for pores.
For pores, wouldn't that be nice? So here's your crumbs, pores. Give us the money. So the city signed a tentative purchase agreement with this developer out of, I want to say, Troy, who is a Chinese immigrant, and she's actually never done any development before.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, this is like her first development.
Wow, okay.
And they have a really kind of rushed timeline to get these buildings up because they're anticipating that a number of Chinese nationals are going to qualify for a visa program to move here and purchase these dwellings.
Yeah, that's another aspect of it that kind of, I think, needs a little more thought and
or something.
Discussion.
Right. And so I want to say maybe 10 or 12 years ago, the city actually came into possession of it after another development fell through. It was in private hands, and the city was always like trying to help something happen. But when the city actually took possession of the land and actually owned it, they stopped getting tax revenue from the owner.
Yeah.
And now we're holding it, but now have more agency about what can happen on the property. They can like seek a buyer. They have more control.
But now it's just an ongoing expense on their books.
It's an ongoing expense on their books. They're trying to make something happen. And the city, I think in the last cycle, I think in 2016, just approved a millage for the city residents to increase their taxes even more to help cover the cost of maintaining that property with the commitment from council that they were going to try and get something going there.
Yeah.
So this is what they had started to try and get going. It's all background. The thing that's become a thing right now is that the mayor pro tem, two other people, I believe one of them is the like development officer for the city.
And city council people?
No, the mayor pro tem, not city council.
Yeah, okay.
I can't even say it. Took a trip to China.
A fact-finding trip.
A fact-finding trip to China to go look at properties that the developer was inspired by. A 12-day fact-finding
trip. These aren't properties that the developer has all developed in China.
No.
They were just like
these are inspiration that had inspired this developer to want to build on this site in Ypsilanti.
Yeah.
And originally the developer offered to pay for the trip for these four members of council and city officials to go to China and look at these properties.
And they, of course, said,
No, that's unethical.
Well, from what I read, they actually consulted the city attorney who said that would not be okay.
And then somehow a university group.
It's hard to say it with a straight face, honestly.
So apparently a student group at Wayne State University, the Chinese student group, stepped forward with a few thousand dollars to pay for the trip.
Was it 8,000?
It was a chunk of money.
I think it was.
I don't want to quote a number because I know I'm going to be wrong.
Yeah.
But with the student group.
It wasn't $50,000.
It wasn't $50,000.
Yeah. And it wasn't $1,000.
It wasn't $1,000. It was a chunk of money.
Yeah.
That apparently a student group on campus at Wayne State University.
They saved up their pennies.
Saved up their pennies. And out of the goodness of their hearts, are going to just pay for our city council to go to China and learn some things.
Yeah.
Because freedom? I don't know.
So people were understandably like, wondering where that money actually came from.
Where did a bunch of college kids get that money from?
Yeah, before it went into the coffers of this student group.
Right. And so there was conversation that it came from the Chinese consulate, also unethical.
Out of Chicago? Like the Chinese consulate in Chicago?
Yeah, there was conversation.
Sure.
And that's not really ethical.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the mayor sent an email to the student group and said, where's this money coming from? And he said, we do bake sales or like we do whatever, fundraisers. But, you know, most of this money is coming from XYZ Development Corporation.
Ding, 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 ding.
And this conversation, this email exchange took place before the trip.
Was it, this was like captured on LinkedIn somehow?
Yes.
And someone took screenshots of it or saved it.
But, and the mayor says that she did not read those emails before she left and discovered this when she came back. And folks are kind of like, really?
Either you're really, really lying, or you're too dumb to be mayor.
Or something like that, right? I think people are thinking that and not saying it.
Yeah.
And I think a local here, Mark Maynard, has written a lot about this.
Mm-hmm.
And his sort of upshot, and full disclosure, Mark Maynard, I'm not anti-development, but I'm really not down for anything quite like this, personally.
Well, my gripe about it is that it does seem like it's all built around this scheme to get some visas for foreign nationals to live here.
And like, why is that?
This,
why are we motivated to do that?
I don't, it's like the, it's like what happens with, these
H-1B visas.
Yeah. With H-1B visas for foreign nationals to come and take, engineering jobs.
Yeah.
It's,
and suppress wages for other.
Yeah. It's not, when you scratch the surface of it, it's not actually helping
anyone.
Well, no, it's helping the people that own the companies that have to, that are able to, to basically use H-1B labor as even housing them and transporting them and whatnot, cheaper.
Right.
You know,
it's really to lower labor costs.
And because they're here on a special visa, they're basically captive.
Yes. So, and they just do what they're told to
so it's,
say.
I'm not going to call it slavery, but it's almost an form,
it's an indentured servitude. It's indentured servitude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, I don't know if you're okay with that. Then maybe you're okay with that. That's fine.
But why would this city be arranging this with a valuable piece of real estate when it's not going to benefit, you know, residents and...
And people... In fairness, people are like, well, it would just be great to get something on the site and get people down here who are spending money in the city, right?
You know, I guess that would happen.
That's the idea, right?
Yeah.
But
it's also not clear how much they really, so they're also an expert at brownfield remediation and they're going to get that all cleaned up too. And apparently, it's going to be not a toxic waste dump anymore.
Apparently.
It's a little head scratching.
It's a little head scratching. And, but, oh, back to Mark Maynard's, his main conclusion, his first conclusion about this whole thing, this whole scandal, the Travelgate, right, is that the project can't go forward now with this. It's got a really big stain on it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And really, this pretty much is a nail in the coffin for this project, which I don't exactly celebrate, but I think it was, I think IPSC's really dodging a bullet to not have this project.
Yeah.
And I will say, quickly, if I can say anything quickly, that I think what's called for here is a strong towns approach, straight up, that this should be developed incrementally by the people who live here.
So maybe unpack that a little bit, if you can.
Okay, so I am a bit of an evangelist for strong towns and think it's really thinking logically about urban development. In the United States today, and a lot of the problems we have, in really every municipality, and I've been saying for maybe 10 years now that Detroit is the needle America has to pass through.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing you've got to understand is that all the problems that Detroit's having them first because they did it first. But it doesn't really work anywhere to build out all these suburbs with all these unfunded infrastructure needs.
You fund it once or you issue a bond to pay for it, and then it's going to take 30 years to actually pay for
it. And when that 30 years is done, you don't have the tax base to maintain any of the infrastructure you've built to service all this development.
And it actually all needs to be replaced and updated before it's even paid for.
Exactly. So now you're on the hook, and you've got all these things where
It was really all predicated on this endless growth model.
This endless growth model. Well, there'll be new money from some new development.
Because the suburbs can keep expanding out further and further.
Infinitely, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's supposed to contract on itself and start again from the center. I don't really understand. But I think all of us have seen the pinch on a municipal level,
yeah,
where our municipal governments can't pay for anything.
No, they're in crisis all over the country.
And there's just not enough. I mean, the strong towns folks have really broken this down, that a lot of these places you'd have to charge people 8 times what you charge them in taxes just to pay for the roads.
And
we're not talking about
so,
sewer. We're not talking about anything else.
Right. And everyone was so excited to move to move to places where they have lower property taxes.
So, yeah, you know, those taxes are going to be 8 times as much to fund all the development to build those places.
What's going
to
happen?
So one of these things
everyone's that broke.
We talk about when we talk about having a strong town or having a resilient municipal balance book, right? Uh-huh. I mean, or just a resilient municipality, is that the development has to be incremental. No one came and built Ypsilanti like that Main Street, that beautiful Main Street.
Yeah, yeah.
That was built over decades.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where someone came and built a one-story whatever,
yeah,
started selling out of it, and when that was paid for, they put on a second floor, mm-hmm, and so on.
And as it's been redone, people have made it, parts of it, really nice again by restoring an old space. Right, and turning an old whatever into a restaurant or into this or that.
Or that,
you know,
or a salon.
It was a milliner's shop. Now it's a burger joint, whatever.
It's a restaurant. It's a rock shop.
Yeah.
It's a clothing store. It's a salon. It's a barber shop. It's a bar. It's a whatever it is.
So there's this churn, yeah.
And also, these places
have... But they're local.
They're local. They're locally owned. And these places, the buildings are reusable. So...
Well, the buildings themselves were solid enough.
They were solid
brick
enough
and, you know,
to be refinished.
And, you know,
and
can
sort
be
of like
retrofitted.
They can be retrofitted to serve some other purpose.
No, that's some Stuart Brand, how buildings learn and stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
Where a simple, flexible building is...
much more valuable.
Than a... something custom
versus these sort of like, you know, these industrial parks. These...
Well, my favorite is like, oh, this was a Pizza Hut, right?
I can tell it was a Pizza Hut.
It was a Pizza Hut.
This was a Long John Silver's, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Etc. And you can kind of sort of repurpose those for a different restaurant.
Yeah.
But that's a restaurant and that's all it can ever be.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Pretty much. And similarly with these office parks. They can be cube farms, and they really can't be anything else.
Yeah,
kind of, sort of.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, they're not attached to any walkable, coherent
anything.
Neighborhood.
So we've got this nice. It's a choice piece of property.
Yeah,
it's a really nice piece of property, and to see it developed into high end housing.
Yeah.
Just high end housing, and they're talking about some retail and this and that. I mean, I don't want to miss.
Abercrombie and Fitch.
I don't want to mischaracterize this developer's plan.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like a good fit to do this one big build out where the city, you know, hands over everything it's got.
Yeah.
Begging these people to come here. You know, there are people here who want to do stuff. They should go there and do stuff.
There are people here who want to do stuff, and it doesn't seem to me very helpful and or even very patriotic to give away all these jewels to Chinese investors. Not to make this about China in particular, but a lot of American property is being bought up
by
outside investors, and not just outside.
Are you racist now? Is
that not just outside as in as far away as China, but outside as in Wall Street. Right?
Yes.
Which now is taking over neighborhoods and owning tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of suburban homes.
Yeah, they're renting them out. Yeah.
Yeah, and so now Wall Street is becoming like the biggest landlord.
But just to boil it down to, what are you even saying here? So okay, so we're not going to do that development. Then what, huh? Which is like people love to say that.
You can't solve all our problems, so why criticize those of us who are doing a money laundering deal to solve them?
Exactly.
International immigration fraud.
So what's your idea?
Yeah.
I came up with fraud. What about you? I want to say a movement afoot. There's some folks who are pushing back, and their goal is to keep Ypsilanti affordable, and the real concern is that all this housing comes in, it's high priced, and it drives up
Absolutely.
Rents all over the city.
Absolutely, yeah. It's not a trivial concern.
Not
honestly.
A trivial concern. No, it's really not.
Because our house was not even not in Ypsilanti. It was not significantly cheaper than in Ann Arbor.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a kick in the teeth. But right. we're not gonna bitch and moan about that.
We have a lovely house now.
Bitch and moaning about other things.
Okay, other things.
The an incremental approach allows. I think, like inflation, there's not a lot of ways around this sort of thing where prices go up.
Sure.
Right? But I think an incremental development approach allows the community to absorb those changes apace.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And really...
Also, I think this shouldn't be understated. It doesn't all fall apart at the same time if you build it over time.
Yes.
It's like dollar cost averaging for putting money in the stock market, right? It doesn't all crash at once.
And so, you know, you make this one investment or one private investor makes this one investment and it falls through.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the whole piece. It wasn't this whole property that fell through.
Right.
It's that 1/10 of an acre that you sold that fell through.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
Maybe the other five work out. Maybe two of them work out. We don't know. But when you do it incrementally, it doesn't have to be all the money on red.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just going to be safer across all fronts for the whole community.
I guess then the real challenge that way becomes, well, how do you incrementally develop it piecemeal with a lot of different parties involved? But yet somehow it winds up having the effect as if it actually was, there was a plan. There was an overarching plan.
You could not legally build Manhattan today.
No, right? No, it absolutely not. Yeah.
And I think that's part of
Rem Koolhaas' book, Delirious New York.
Right.
Talks about that a lot.
And I think part of a regulatory environment precludes that to some extent.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually what people like to look at, is this place that was developed incrementally and does not look planned.
So you're saying even making it look planned at all is not really a worthy goal.
It's not a worthy goal. We don't want to go there.
Yeah.
Well, no, what we want is more of the downtown.
Maybe planned is the wrong word, but what you want to see is this walkable mix of everything, really.
Well,
incomes and expenses.
When humans build it, they build at human scale.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works. And frankly, the reason Ypsilanti or downtown Ann Arbor, any of these small walkable downtowns look the way they look is because they were built that way. They were built incrementally.
Over the long run.
Over the long haul.
Yeah, yeah. And, no, it's true. I mean, if you're trying to fake that, you wind up with one of these horrifying
town centers in the middle of a farm.
Yeah, villages where like it looks like all the stores are in different buildings and they're just fake facades that are falling apart in years. Yeah, this is really what they're doing out on Ann Arbor, Saline Road, near the Meyer. They're building this like it takes a village, you know.
Yeah,
here,
no, I'm good.
We're installing a village. It'll be done next week. You know what? Yay.
What?
No, it looks like ass.
Yeah,
and it's like unwalkable. The traffic is
terrible. It's really hideous. So I think we can avoid. I think we can actually doing this slow and sort of what's it? You know, chaotic but smart, sort of organized and stupid.
Yeah.
Taking a sort of chaotic but smart, slow, try and see what happens approach.
Yeah.
And this is something I mentioned in passing, but I think I want to unpack more. I think we have to find a way to make this a development project for the people that live in Ypsilanti.
Wouldn't that be nice?
The people that live there
create
the businesses to serve the community there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then and do it at their own pace, on their own timetable. I mean, if we'd started this 20 years ago, it would be clean and full of businesses by now. So don't give me the whole, I don't know, we can't do that, it takes too long. You know.
I mean, and you expect them to turn over, but I mean, I just hope that if this grows organically, all the local folks that wind up buying in, that it doesn't all turn into franchises, you know?
Well, it might, but I doubt that it will. I doubt that it will.
I have a feeling that's like one phase that it might go through.
Sure, but you know what? If these are buildings that can be used for anything over time, I actually don't care.
If they're adaptable.
If they're adaptable, if it's incremental.
It's going to...
I kind of don't care.
It's not going to be a Starbucks forever.
It's not going to be a Starbucks forever.
Yeah.
You know? Because you know what? It was not a hardware store forever. No, it was not.
No.
Whatever it was when it was first built, it wasn't that forever.
Right.
But it's still here. The building is still here, still serving as infrastructure for the city, and still drawing people to this urban space.
Yeah.
So,
well, we do have high hopes for downtown Ypsilanti because our children are going to grow up here for better or worse.
Yeah.
And right now, that's why one of the reasons we were so thrilled to find that we actually are living quite close to this park with long walkable trails.
Yeah.
It's a because really we're gonna use that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even if sometimes you just got to take the kids and work them out.
Work them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make them run around so that they will go to sleep.
That's really the way to do it.
And there's nothing like, you know, seeing your kids actually exercising. It's wonderful. Right.
And to see them tired and well rested, you know, and good and tired.
They come home and they take a nap. You know.
And that's beautiful stuff right there.
Yeah, and they're building up their bodies. So we have high hopes for this place. It's kind of a weird mess.
Now. Oh, it really is. It's kind of a weird mess.
The way it's evolved and devolved historically and been cut through by different roads. And
historically, just to throw a little more background for folks not from here.
Ipsitucky.
Well, there's the Ipsitucky part, right?
Yeah.
But Ypsilanti is where Ann Arbor keeps its pores.
Pretty much, yeah.
And all the working class people that they don't want there, all the brown people they don't want there are in Ypsilanti.
A lot of them, yeah.
A lot of them, right. And how did someone put it? She was a very nice person. I liked her a lot. But she was like, we're moving to Ann Arbor because Ipsy is so, you know, dirty.
It's really true. If you go to like the Kroger near here, it's filthy.
It's kind of dirty.
And it's much more so than the Kroger in Saginaw, you know?
Yeah, which is kind of nice. Yeah. But and actually, just as an aside, a lot of stuff in Saginaw is so nice that I frequently, like 2 or 3 times a week, I'm like, maybe I should just drive to Saginaw and get it.
Well, I'm still going to Saginaw for haircuts.
Right? But the...
It's cheaper, and it's I know the guys. I can sit down and chat with them.
It's just easier, you know?
Yeah.
So some of that reality is playing out here.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a lot of pressure on Ann Arbor right now for affordable housing in Ann Arbor.
It's a real thing. There's been studies commissioned and all this. It's
a horrible situation.
It's a terrible situation.
And
for
so folks are coming from Ann Arbor to move to Ypsilanti, and. Because we've been keeping the pores here so long, like we got to move the pores out before we can move in because we don't want to live near the pores.
We
got to
push them around.
Yeah. So they get, you know, because our kids aren't going to school with them. Let's just be clear about that.
Exactly.
So there's this shift that people are trying
to. We just found a charter school.
Yeah, you know.
So it'll be a magnet.
Yeah,
it'll
be a magnet school. And you can test to get in. Yeah. The So that's part of what's going on here that we're not talking about as a community, where that's actually somewhat. I don't want to say conscious because we're not talking about it, but that's part of what's happening.
Yeah.
Is this shift, like if you shift the lever hard enough and fast enough, certain people and certain populations will have to move.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that housing is available for folks who couldn't make the cutoff for Ann Arbor, but you know, wanted their space like it.
They're still pretty damn wealthy.
Yeah. And, that's part of the subtext of what's happening here. And these folks are pushing back Defend Affordable Ypsilanti, Defend Affordable Ypsi, are trying to say, no, there are people who live here and this is their home. And they shouldn't have to leave.
Yeah.
So I think there's a way to do that that really benefits everyone by making our city more solvent.
I hope so.
I really hope so. Yeah. But, you know, here's the thing, though. The only way that's going to happen is if the city doesn't hand over what rightfully belongs to its citizens.
Yes.
To corporate interests.
Yes.
But instead operates to the benefit of its citizens and the development of its community.
And stops accepting bribes.
That's going to go a long way. Although, I know, that seems naive, right? It's the way business
is
done. This
is just the way the world works.
Just the way the world works.
Now, this is a pretty blatant example. I honestly think this is Trumpism.
Oh, that just the way the world works thing?
Well, no, that you know, a fish rots from the head, right? And and is like, well, if, you know, if this completely cynical guy who's breaking every known ethics law and many that haven't been discovered yet can become president, well, you know, nothing means anything and nothing matters, so why can't we do anything we want?
What's the big deal, right?
Yeah. So, no, I do think that's...
there's a tone-setting thing?
It's a tone-setting thing. I think they would have thought twice about taking advice, you know, thought harder about taking the advice of the city attorney if we hadn't don't have a con artist, you know. Presidents have always been con artists, right?
Yeah, that's kind of like
But it is a tone thing. It's like he just doesn't even care about maintaining an appearance of propriety.
Propriety, right. And I think there was like this, oh, well, we can't take that. And then this money appeared from some other source.
Yeah, oh, well, it's from the students.
Yes.
That's not your due diligence, and that's you can't hide behind.
Oh, no, and really, the idea that a bunch of college students have got a few grand laying around that aren't using. Sale. You know, did a bake sale, and now they're going to send you to China from their bake sale. I don't know. Or their fundraiser, whatever it was. I don't want to make bake sale a thing.
So we should wind up on this topic, but I think we're gonna follow up on it in the future.
Yeah.
And we're going to see if maybe we can get a guest on the podcast to talk about it.
Yeah.
So.
And really think some of these ideas through.
Think it through a little more. Mm-hmm. But so we have another topic we mentioned. Do you want to talk about some of the listener feedback we've gotten?
Yeah. So before we sign off, I just want to mention some feedback from Adam Vega in Texas.
Adam.
Hey, thanks for writing in. We understand that you would like it to be in smaller segments. An hour and a half is a long time for those millennials to listen to.
That was the longest one we had done.
I think it was. But
and last week we were exhausted, burned out, had a lot to say, but we weren't. It was kind of a low energy conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll try to do better about that.
But I don't know. What do you think? Do you want to try and break it into segments? Like if we organize ourselves just a little bit, we might be able to break it into 20 or 30 minute blocks. So you could listen in chunks. That's kind of, I think, where he was going, was that, you know, is there some way you could break it up so I don't have to start over from the beginning to listen?
I'll think on it.
And I wasn't trying to answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, we could tag segments, like this starts at 20 minutes in, this starts at 40 minutes in. David Feldman, who does this, who does a show, has this problem too, and he does 4-hour shows.
God bless him.
And he has like a monologue, he has 3 or 4 guests, he has a comic, he has, you know.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
But they're really long. So, but because they're broken into segments, you can just stop it and come back to it later, you know, which is what I do. I can't, my ears gets, honestly, just having headphones on my head for 4 hours, my ears get sore.
Right. So, maybe we could do I think with a little more organization, we could have it like clearer breaks and maybe do some notation so you can.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the suggestion. We're still discovering a structure for this show.
This is how we're going to do it.
When I joined Rich on his podcast, Bloodthirsty Vegetarians, I basically was dropping in to an existing show.
With a format and structure.
Then I was now a co-host, replacing his former co-host.
Did he eat him or is that?
Yes, a bloodthirsty vegetarian.
That's too bad.
No,
but you survived.
I survived. I made it through alive, but that show kind of trailed off. We stopped doing it.
Yeah,
but that was easy for me because he produced it and had the existing structure.
Right.
But now I
we're casting about trying to find our way.
Yeah. See, when I was this goes back to like if I was a college radio DJ and I had my druthers, I would always do freeform. I'm going to play whatever I feel like.
So there, listen there if you want.
Yeah, but now people appreciate a little bit of
structure.
Structure. So
yeah,
anybody else?
That's all for this week. But if you've got feedback, please tell us.
Yep.
We'll respond.
Yep. Okay. And you can leave a message on the blog, and they're moderated, but I'll approve them. You usually get, you know, within a few hours.
Yeah.
So, okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and take care.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.